Hi, my name is Lauren and I'm from Lawrence Free State. Before I start, I just want to say that tonight isn't about who gets to go to Brave New Voices. For me, tonight is about seeing people say what they needed to say. Maybe they mess up.
At the Gem Theater on Saturday night, the top four spoken word poetry teams from local high schools competed in a slam competition.
We love you, poet! We ain't gonna stop loving you, poet!
Here's the poem that clinched the victory.
Chris Cow, a.k.a. the American Sniper. I wonder how it would feel to kill someone. Now I know, no big deal. Another body drops, another man would be murdered, another father who couldn't go home to his wife or daughter slaughtered. Somebody asked me, what was my favorite distance? I said, the closer the better. Tired of holding shovels, burying brothers beneath barricades of sand, who are fighting to protect our land. Cause out here, it's about danger. You can't find landmines and snipers. Signs that read baby killers and murderers protesting us, the troops who were going over to fight. You have to understand that over here, this is life. When a young boy is caught in a line of sight, a pipe bomb is in his right, or when it is him or five soldiers, the definition of wrong and right becomes skewed. They were protesting the wrong people. I never voted in war. I never voted to go to war. I never signed up. I signed up to protect this country, and that's what I believe I was doing. So if this country goes to ruin, I will shoot, and I will keep shooting, even if I don't know what's for. They say I saved 160, but I believe I killed more. They say I saved hundreds, but it's not about the ones you saved. You remember, it's not about the medals you earned, because the shine reminds me of gun, fire. You have to understand that my dad was a deacon and my mother taught Sunday school, so I'm willing to meet my creator, to answer every shot I took for every bastard child I created, every wife I widowed. This is war at the door where they fit you for your coffin check mark, yes! The organ donor, so your kids can have the heart to be a part of future wars. My wife hasn't seen me in months. To her, I'm already dead. A ghost in the night, another reason for me to shoot, to kill, to fight! After a while, we start joking about all the dead bodies. What do you call a man with a bullet in his head? Dead, good one. But you have to understand, this is more than war and its policies. A bunch of game players sitting around congratulating each other in war, while real lives get screwed up. People ask me all the time, how many people have you killed? Responses, does the answer make me more or less than a man?
That was Alton Heron from Paseo High School at Saturday night's spoken word competition Louder Than a Bomb. Paseo took home the victory. I'm Gina Kaufman. Today on Central Standard, we're going to meet the high school English teacher who brought Louder Than a Bomb to Kansas City 2 years ago. He's just announced that he'll be leaving the classroom to lead slam poetry workshops full-time. Paul Richardson, welcome to Central Standard.
I'm delighted to be here. Thank you.
Well, so tell me about Saturday night's event. We just heard a little of it, but how many people were there?
Well, we were at the Gem Theater, which has about 500 seats, and I think we were two-thirds, three-quarters full. We were more full last year in our first year. I was a little disappointed, but it was energetic nonetheless. Yeah.
What was all the snapping that we were hearing during that poem? Who was snapping?
The whole audience, and mostly the poets. It's become it's kind of a tradition among the slam poetry community to, in support of a nice line of poetry that comes out. And even you'll also see it when a poet got there in nerves, forgets a line of their poem, and after a real small pause, you'll hear snaps, and it's the audience sort of supporting, like, hey, take your time, you're fine, we're with you.
That's really sweet. It's especially awesome in a competitive situation.
Yeah The point is not the points. The point is the poetry. That's our motto. And you know, to think about the four teams that were there, it really on any given night, the judging is arbitrary. It's there is no science behind, you know, ascribing points to adolescent poetry. And so the kids that are there know that it, that the competition, it's important. You want to win. It's, you know, it's an ego thing. It's human nature to like want to win. But when you, like I tweeted this the other night, you know, like when they announce a winner, it's like the air gets let out of the room. Like you care, but like, oh, why did we have to muck this thing up with something about who won?
Why do we have to? I mean, I've kind of wondered that too. It seems like does the idea of poetry being competitive is a little foreign to me.
Right. And the founders up in Chicago of Louder Than a Bomb know that too. And this is a little bit of a tangent, but I had kind of an epiphany. My crazy cousin set up this night where we were racing Hot Wheels a couple weeks ago. Yes, grown men racing Hot Wheels.
Yeah, I was about to say crazy how, but you've answered that question.
Yeah, right. And so, you know, we order our Hot Wheels off Amazon or go pick them up at a toy store, and then we lay our Hot Wheels not side by side on a track.
I want our listeners to picture who is doing this a little bit. You're in a cardigan with, you're the youngest man I've ever seen with glasses on a lanyard.
Yeah, that's
around
that's
your neck.
That's my style.
Go on.
I got my old man swagger down. Yeah.
In Hot Wheels.
Yeah, and I'm 40, so it's like, yeah, so we were racing Hot Wheels. And but I'm going to lead this back to this. If we showed up to that garage and only for 3 hours laid one car on a track at the time and just watched it go down the track, that would have been incredibly boring. But instead, you take two cars and you set them side by side, and you didn't build the car. You had nothing to do with the manufacturing of the car, but it's your car. And so that makes the thing more exciting, even though it doesn't matter. It really doesn't matter. And so the same is true for Louder Than a Bomb, which is, you know, the point is not the points, the point is the poetry, and the kids know that at every turn. But we would otherwise have a three-hour poetry reading where kids were just coming up one at a time and we clap and snap for them. And the element of competition, it brings people into public spaces. It's a trick. It's really a trick to get people that much more excited about it and to bring the public in. And the intensity is palpable. And so,
well, something I was wondering too is like creativity and poetry especially, I think, can be very in your own head and very isolating, and turning it into a team sport is an interesting concept.
Yeah, it really is. It, you know, in a way, it's sort of like a track meet where these individuals sort of they collaborate and they want to do their best for the focus of the team. And really, like the other night, you know, the judges, which again, it's arbitrary. There's not a point system, but there has to be. So they were given these slightly lower scores, and not just within a team, but every team there. I mean, they were standing up out of their seats and shouting back at the judges. We say, listen to the poem. And, you know, every...
It's like questioning the ruling or whatever.
Exactly, yeah. And it's like that at every bout. It isn't within, just within Raytown or Paseo that their teammates are yelling at the judge. It's everybody yelling at the judges. And that community aspect is the nature of the competition.
The competing teams were Raytown, Paseo, Shawnee Mission South, and Free State High School in Lawrence. Can you tell me a little about each of those teams?
Oh, man. Well, Paseo, won for the second year in a row, and they just got beautiful kids. They're all beautiful kids, and they've really embodied the spirit of it. I see their team members throughout I've seen them throughout the year since last year's competition. They show up for lots of stuff, and Raytown High shows up with a bus everywhere they go, and they're
a bus with audience?
Audience members, like kids from the school. I mean, it is their thing. It's amazing to watch. I mean, they're and we're all a part of it, but like they show up and they've all got the same sweatshirts on when we have chants and
Can you letter in poetry?
I don't know, not yet. If you ain't, you ought to. Raytown has competed both years, and they are they come with this huge crowd and so much love. One of their poets, Will Adams, we gave the Spirit of the Slam Award to this year, and he's a larger-than-life kind of dude.
And Spirit of the Slam, that's someone who embodies the spirit of this whole thing, yeah. which we should get into what that is, yeah. but keep telling us about
him. Yeah, I'll tell you more about Will. And then Shawnee Mission South were newcomers to the competition this year, and the really powerful young ladies that that came through and blew me away. And then Lawrence Free State. I mean, they traveling all the way from Lawrence. My friend Brandon, who I used to teach with at Washington, now he teaches in Lawrence, and they've been at every single event, supporting the other poets, driving, making that long trip, and they've got Lawrence behind it, and they want to start building poetry community in Lawrence that's going to spread. And on that note, we also had a team from Topeka this year. I mean, this is going to grow and grow and grow and spread. So.
Speaking of Free State, there's a poet on that team who has a poem called What's Up, Dad, which I happened to hear online. And I wonder if you could just tell us about that poem and that kid a little bit.
Oh, Kyrie, I feel like he was really embraced this year. I mean, I don't know. Every kid is special. I can think of every one of their faces. And that poem really rings true for a lot of people, and particularly
about an absent father.
About an absent father, exactly. And there's this confusion in it about I hate you. No, I don't hate you. You know, and like that's the truth of this competition. It says so many kids, particularly where I teach, can identify with that. You know, just like. There's this anger behind it, but it's just like, man, why weren't you here? Kyrie's poem, I think people will remember that for a long time.
There was a lot of emotion packed in it. And we did hear a little bit of a performance by Alton Heron. Mm-hmm. What's his story? And what intrigued him so much about this experience in combat, which I'm assuming he's far too young to have experienced himself?
Yeah. Alton's a really special dude. I sat next to him the other night at the competition, and he's hilarious. He break dances during breaks, and he hugs it out. He supports everybody. He transcends. I think the sort of normal content of a poem with the the more personal aspect, and he reaches out, and I think he embodies the true nature of a poet, where he's speaking for the larger conscience of a population, which is hard to see in young poets. I think he recognizes the things that are taking place in culture, and that's a hot button topic because of the movie. I think for him to pull that out, I'm amazed at that kid.
So he put himself in someone else's shoes in a way that you might. I mean, I'm thinking about high school writing assignments where I remember one where I imagined what it was like to be some like ancient Roman warrior and wrote, in the first person about that. How is an assignment like that different from what we just heard Alton Heron do?
Yeah, I don't know that Alton knew he was writing per se a persona piece, I think they call it. His poem last year, I think, was transcendent as well. So I don't know. It's like, which came first, the chicken or the egg? I don't know if the formula for a persona piece came first, or if people wrote that because it's powerful. And I think for Alton, it's probably the latter. I think he probably wrote it because it's powerful and it was on people's minds.
What do you like about slam poetry? I mean, this is something that you've thrown a lot of energy into, not to do it yourself, but for other people to do it, younger people to do it.
I could speak for so long on that, and I think selfishly it's really just entertaining. So to sit there and to be a part of this, it's I am moved. I am moved into emotions that I don't get to experience any other place. I think I recall myself as an adolescent while I'm sitting there with adolescents listening, and
that's not unpleasant.
No, it's not. It isn't at all, because I know that if I had had some kind of outlet like this back then, it would have changed my life. And so then I get to sit here and be okay with my life as a grown man and say, like, wow, we're providing this for adolescents right now.
Tell me about your adolescent years and what you could have used this outlet for.
Well, I think the kind of marked point in my life was when my parents got divorced when I was in eighth grade. And for me, that was the sky is falling. This, like, my world crumbled in, and I didn't know how to treat that. And so I had my adolescent years. I was a terrible high school student. I remember very little about high school. I remember my crafts and jewelry class. I enjoyed that class. That was my downtime. But I don't remember much other than partying on the weekends and working at a job where I was held responsible for my behavior, and I loved that job for that reason. And so I think an adolescent without a place to, you know, this is in the Louder Than a Bomb philosophy, actually. You know, like, there's a, we're kind of missing rites of passage in Western culture, unless it's within your own little community. And there's this West African author, Maladoma Somé, who speaks about rites of passage as three parts: a separation, an ordeal, and a homecoming. And when you are separated, maybe in adolescence, from your home, and you're out kind of in this suspended state, and you go through something, and it could be the death of a loved one, or it could be you lost a volleyball game. That's an ordeal. And when you go through an ordeal, and you're in this suspended state, you look for things to grab onto that are going to be your support system. And if your home life isn't there, and maybe your community, you're not really, don't feel a part of your community, you're going to find a place to grab onto. And for me, what I grabbed onto was this group of friends who I hung out with on weekends until the wee hours of morning. And so I think the adolescent mind does that. I think we do look for place to initiate ourselves, to feel a part of something. And the consequences of that are could be dangerous, you know. And this is a community. You watch these kids with this outlet of being on stage and pouring their hearts out, and then being welcomed by a crowd back into their community. This community, that's their initiation, and that's their community, a safe place, a powerful place.
I want to get back to slam poetry shortly, but it interests me that as a high school teacher, your memories of high school are kind of vague. Like, at what point did your thought process lead you to the idea that you were going to teach high school? What inspired that? Because it doesn't sound like it was such a positive high school education experience of your own.
I think it's that very thing. And I think it's why I'm moving away from it as well. And so, you know, I decided when I was in seventh grade that I was watching my geography teacher, and I said, I would like to do that. You know, he was a funny dude. He was a good teacher, and I wanted to be that guy. And I didn't start college until I was 23 years old. I turned 24 my first semester at college. I was going to school to be a math teacher. And I knew I was going to teach older kids, secondary ed. I did some student teaching at a junior high, and decided there's no way I'm going to teach junior high kids. Those kids are insane. And so I did my student teaching at Washington High School, and I begged to be hired there at the end of that year.
Why? What felt so strong about that?
I probably felt a kinship to those kids. I mean, in a way, I was 30 years old at the time, and so much has happened in my life in the last 10 years that I don't think I was transformed from my adolescence even at 30 years old. Like, I really feel like I didn't know myself at 30 years old because of the way my adolescence was. And so here I am 10 years, and much has happened in the last 10 years for me to wake up to the truth about myself, the truth about my existence here. And that's available to an adolescent. I'm not smarter than those adolescents. They are just, I am them 20 years, 25 years older. And so that's available. Like, these things are available for them to understand the nature of their existence and to work through the emotions of an issue. And you can ask my students. I stop class to take care of issues like that. You know, it's important.
So at a big poetry reading just a few weeks ago, you announced your plans to leave Washington High School in KCK to work full-time for KC Word Shop. What prompted that?
The announcement or the KC Word Shop?
Well, both. What prompted the decision that that the classroom wasn't where you were going to do this work anymore?
Yeah, I've known it for a while. I just officially put in my resignation this week, and my students have known it too. They've known it for a long time. I'm very transparent with my students, particularly, and you know, the state of education for me, I don't think I can exist in it right now. Speaking the truth about it to everybody, I believe that it's obsolete. I think we need to be doing a better job. I think there's a standard of excellence that ought to be in place that's we are nowhere near for if we really want to change things in culture. And so while I speak about this in transparency with my students, I also work underneath it. And so I'm then sort of I become kind of a you know, I don't honor my word in that. So
are you feeling like you're part of a problem?
Yeah, exactly.
Okay, so hold that thought, Paul. We're headed for a break, but when we return, you can join the conversation. Are there lessons best learned outside the classroom? 816-235-2888 is the number to call. That's 816-235-2888. Back in a sec. Welcome back to Central Standard. I'm Gina Kaufman. Our guest this morning is teacher Paul Richardson. He's just announced that he's leaving the classroom to take up slam poetry at the KC Word Shop full time. He's been feeling like he can be a better educator from outside the system. What do you think? Call 816-235-2888 to chime in. And Paul, say more about what the problem is, the problem as you perceive it.
I guess I can't remember who said it, but you know, it's like education shouldn't be preparation for life. Education should be life itself. And I may have messed that up a little bit, but we sit in these classes, and I could go on about this, but for instance, at Washington, we start the day, kids come into the school when it's dark out, and throughout the winter, it's dark and cold out, and the first thing they are doing is walking through metal detectors and taking their belts off and having their bags run through, you know, these metal detectors. And that's not a gesture of welcome to the place, welcome to your education, you know. And I get there's a whole argument behind that, and we don't have to mess with that, but I'm just saying that is the gesture. And so from that point on, it's 7 hours of these disjointed, you know, in this disjointed instruction where you sit and you listen to the one teacher for 45 minutes, and then a really loud bell rings and you listen to another teacher talk about something completely different than what you were talking about 5 minutes ago. And that happens 7 times throughout the day. And I, you know, like one day woke up like, life is never going to be like that again, where you're just like run through this 8 hours of this rat race of like, memorize this. And, you know, and here we are now in a state where the diploma doesn't promise anything anymore. It used to promise something a little bit, you know, let's say half a century ago. And now we're in a position where college is not only really, really expensive, but it also, a bachelor's degree doesn't promise you anything anymore. You know, I think I heard somewhere that someone with a bachelor's degree, that, you know, these recent college grads is the largest unemployment rate among age groups. And it doesn't, not only are you not out there getting a job, you're also not really finding yourself. And I, you know, like you talk to people in their 30s and 40s, and they're kind of reaching for something to be excited and passionate about if they're just out there, you know, like cashing a paycheck. And
Do you think that's a failure of the education system?
Yeah, I mean, there's a debate that maybe we shouldn't be doing and be involved in character education and that sort of thing. But if they're going to be spending their time in an institution that's called education, and we value it and we cherish it and we say it's this wonderful thing, why not make it the thing that not builds character, but that where you can go learn about how your brain works. You know, in an age where we're, you know, I want to check my cell phone right now, in an age where we're distracted, like why not learn something about mindfulness? Why not let adolescents direct their own curriculum and let them go find internships? Like not just a field trip every a couple of times a year, but really like go you are partnered with this, you know, this business or this profession for 3 weeks, and you're really going to decide if that's something you want to do. An adolescent is responsible enough to handle that. You know, yeah, we should be throwing some things at them. You know, English and social studies could probably be taught together for an hour each morning. Math and science could probably be taught together for an hour each morning. But why not give them the freedom to roam about, to build relationships, to practice internships, to develop their own curriculum? I mean, the internet's there. Yeah.
Here's something I always wonder when people talk about self-directed curriculum. Mm-hmm. This is just a hypothetical, okay? Mm-hmm. But think about the kid who loves art and under his or her own direction is just going to do art all the time and maybe not be super interested in math. Mm-hmm. Later in life, this same person could be like, architecture, that is an application of art. But guess what it is also an application of? And like, guess what other skills you're going to need? And maybe, maybe adolescents are actually too young to know what sort of like medicine they might need to take that's going to help them for later.
Absolutely. I totally get that. And that's why I think if, like, I'm good at big ideas, I think. Instead of seeing us as teachers, like I'm the full bucket of all the knowledge you need, and you are the empty bucket, child, sit there and let me spill things. Mm-hmm. Instead of thinking of it that way, we should have schools full of facilitators and counselors to where we can orchestrate that. We can orchestrate that sort of thing. Like, yeah, you're an artist, but you know, maybe there is an aspect of that curriculum that they know they have to seek out a profession in whatever, you know.
So it sounds like, if you don't mind me putting words in your mouth for a moment, correct me if I'm wrong here. It sounds like you're saying that this isn't like a bureaucratic or administrative issue. It's a philosophical problem.
I think so. Yeah, I think that's fair. I mean, there's definitely a lack of resources in public schools. I don't think anybody would argue. Well, some people might argue with that, but trust me, there's a lack of resources in public schools for the most part, and there's an inequity too. And so that's part of a larger conversation. I don't mess with that conversation too much, but I think a lot of people will mess with that conversation. For me, it is philosophical. It's like, if you take a look at what's happening in culture right now, and if you consider that we're launching each generation, we launch onto the world as the generation that it will inherit the workplaces and you know, legislative departments, and you know, these are the people that are going to be inheriting the city and around the country. And what do we want to launch? What do we want to put out there? Kids that memorize things? That beg you to let them do makeup work so they can get points in this idea of it's like an economy at schools anymore. It's not this enlightenment area, you know. So
how, in what way do you think slam poetry is some like model of an alternative?
Well, so you know, you're referring to like the Casey Word Shop, and that's you know, really what we're doing with the Casey Word Shop is taking an outlet like writing for stage performance, poetry, and applying that to any sort of way that a young person wants to write for a showcase. And so essentially in a cute kind of way, we want to write for film festivals, we want to write for theater festivals, we want to write to publish work, we want to write to make a music festival. And so kids are writing for a purpose, and an artful purpose, a productive purpose.
Do they find their way there on their own to this place? It's downtown, right?
Yeah, we're at 20th and Baltimore, and it's still growing. Like, it's not like right now it's a hot mess over there, so it will it's very well run in my brain right now, you know.
I have a lot of things like that.
but I don't want us to think of the Word Shop as a community center where kids find their way down there, which it is. We want them to be that, but I want to think of it as a presence in Kansas City where this is an institution that lets kids from these segregated areas of metropolitan areas where they intermingle with each other and collaborate with artists and educators from around the community in apprenticeships. And we're all part of this thing that's a larger conversation of sharing stories. And And so, yeah, for the individual poets and writers, it's great. But there's also this idea of letting people gather in public spaces and share stories. And so the Wordshop is more than just slam poetry. It's about bringing kids together to share their stories, because otherwise we're operating by stereotypes. You know, we don't know much about kids from other we meet them on basketball courts and football fields, and we, you know, elbow each other, and then we shake hands and say goodbye, but we don't really know them.
You know, when you brought Louder Than a Bomb to Kansas City a couple of years ago, part of what you said in the reporting done at that time had inspired you was that you had seen in Chicago, where Louder Than a Bomb originated, that it had this ability to transcend socioeconomic divisions in that city, and that you thought the same thing could happen here. Is that something you've observed?
Absolutely. Yeah. You can watch it at every single bout. The kids from other teams, they're hugging each other in small groups after a poet leaves the stage. They're mingling with each other afterwards. Just the other night, it was said again, you know, Will Adams said, he said he had a best friend in the audience from another team, and he would not have known him if it weren't for this. And that happens at every single bout. These kids know each other now.
Let's hear from one of our listeners who has something to say about education, this bigger conversation about education. Alex in Lawrence, welcome to Central Standard.
Hi, thank you. Yes, I want to talk about sort of education from the first perspective. You know, I'm going through it right now. I'm a little bit older, like you were when you went back to college. And what I see is no integrity towards actual learning in the classroom. I mean, like, the most common question is what's on the test or what's on the quiz that's coming up. I don't think it's their fault. I think it's a product of this system that, you know, they're transferring straight from all these influencers telling them what's important, and it's the test, and you're going into college, and what's important is the test. It's not the material.
Alex, it sounds like being a little bit older than these other students is part of the perspective you have, but why did you wait, and how do you think your perspective differs?
So I was in the military for 5 years, and then I went back towards the education. I recognized it wasn't what I wanted to do. And I think it's the integrity thing. I want to actually understand what's being taught, not just memorizing what's going to be on the test.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Let's hear what our educator in the room has to say about this. Paul Richardson, what about this memorization issue coming up again?
Yeah, you can ask my student, it's the bane of my existence. I mean, when they talk about, you know, when they scribble something down on paper and say, I did my work, can I get my points, you know, and I'm just like, it's not what this is supposed to be. You know, it's so exhausting. The first article we read, and Alex, you should go search for this article. It's pretty short. It's called "The Goal of Education is Becoming," and it casts aside the assertions that we should sit here and memorizing things. And it's about if this is true education, like we should really, your young person that you sent off to your public school ought to be becoming something. They ought to be becoming a more compassionate thinker, a more productive citizen, and open-minded citizen. And why do we place so much? I mean, this grades are arbitrary. I mean, a kid with a 91.7 at Washington High School is not the intellectual equal of a kid with a 91.7 over on some other school district, or even another school, or another English classroom. It's crazy.
Well, that issue of, just to play devil's advocate, thinking about something like, if I have learned the scientific method, if I have memorized that, mm-hmm. then maybe I'm becoming a scientist. Mm-hmm. Or if I have memorized what the legislative branch of government does and what checks and balances mean, maybe I'm becoming a good voter.
Mm-hmm. I think if that's the intention, that's completely fair. Yes, that's true. And if that's the intention of the teacher, if that's the intention of the teacher, sure. I don't know that it always is. And I also think it becomes drowned out in these seven disjointed periods of rat race and bells. And
the bell point is a good one for sure.
You should hear the bells at Washington. It's the most. It's we cringe. It's frightening. Like if somebody sounded a bell right here, I would like something would change in my body. Like I would get tense. Yeah.
Mark Twain said he never let school get in the way of his education, or at least I think that was Mark Twain. Have societies like rebels always felt this way, or is there something particularly troublesome going on now?
I think they've probably always felt that way. It's awesome you brought up I share a birthday with Samuel Clemens. Thank you. November 30th.
A fine Missourian.
Yeah, right. I think there's probably always been... I think it's difficult to step outside your position and the place that signs your paycheck and provides you with health insurance, to step outside and say, I don't agree with this, and there should be a reason why you don't agree with this. I think it's hard to do. I think it's really, really difficult to understand that, like, just because an institution is in place the way that it is, it doesn't make it right. And people don't challenge things enough. I mean, step back and look at the truth of what we're really doing with a school, and you think about the potential, and like I said, a standard of excellence that could be held. And it's a chasm there.
Do you think that in a way, if you're really passionate about educating adolescents and also being part of that process of them becoming something, mm-hmm. and finding those kinds of rites of passage, mm-hmm. do you think that by doing it outside of the school system, and the school system is where everyone kind of filters through, that maybe some of the people who need that the most aren't going to find their way to it?
Possibly, which is why, I mean, I love being in front of young people and talking. And one of my roles at the KC Word Shop I want to spend 10 or 15 minutes in every classroom in the metro area. And so kids know that it exists. And, you know, hopefully with this extremely efficient and all-encompassing mass transit system we have here in Kansas City to get kids down to 20th in Baltimore.
Am I detecting sarcasm?
Possibly. Wyandotte County does exist in a little bit of a bubble. I drove kids through West Bottoms one time on the way to the Jazz Museum, and it's 10 minutes from their home. And they're like, what is this? I'm like, it's the West Bottoms. I'm like, whoa. They don't know anything about it. They don't know anything about their city. What did you ask me? Why did I go on that tangent?
I can't even remember, to be honest.
My bad.
I'm sure it was a good answer. I really truly don't remember. However, I do have another question for you, which is about more about process again. From a logistical standpoint, what has your experience with Louder Than a Bomb taught you that could be adopted by a school system, by an education philosophy? Yeah. Is there any way that these things can exist together?
Yes, absolutely. And I think we started to at Washington with our Washington Word Shop. But young people need time and space to just be. And I think it's not just this English sort of artsy sort of area. Like they really do just time to need to be and to process. And there should be provided a space in the day and in time and in physical space where they can just be at this place that's their public school, and relax for a little bit, you know, and let ideas flow. And I think it does offer that in that philosophy. And, you know, I don't know if it's perfect. I've saw myself as just being a part of the larger nebulous conversation of what public education. It's not an answer. It's one area of discourse within the thing.
Paul Richardson of Louder Than a Bomb and KC Word Shop, still a teacher at Washington High School for a couple more months. Thanks for being here today. You've given us a lot to think about.
Oh, thank you. I'm delighted to be here. Thanks.